people talking bad about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on wars we fight and griping about the way things ought to be. And I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting and talking down to me. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man. You're walking on the fighting side of me. And I wonder just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting in a foreign dynasty. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting in a foreign dynasty. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me, and that's the name of this program here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Well, lots more news and views for our people, and of course, those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia, New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of you who may be listening this morning in the European heartland. Well, here's some news from Africa. Quite rightly called Darkest Africa, from Burkina Faso. Gunmen killed 14 at Christian church service. Gunmen launched another attack on a church service in the West African nation of Burkina Faso, killing 14 people and wounding several others in the eastern town of Hantoukouri. Sunday's massacre follows attacks by radical Islamist insurgents on military posts, a mining convoy, and places of worship in the rest of the countryside that the army has struggled to contain. The assailants fled on motorbikes after spraying bullets into the Protestant congregation, authorities said. Such attacks have quadrupled during the past 2 years in Burkina Faso. Which was once known as a peaceful farming state that prized art and religious tolerance. Well, not anymore, due to fanatical Muslims. Now, I was also reading the financial pages, another item, that there are mining companies that have actually, a Canadian mining company, that has suspended operations after a bus, or several buses containing some of its workers, were ambushed by these Islamic fanatics and killed. These are black people, incidentally. One of the things I expect not to hear is any particular complaint from Christian churches. Where are the marches denouncing this? Where are the protests calling on Muslims to explain. As Ricky Ricardo used to say in the popular 50s comedy, I Love Lucy. Ricky, of course, was a Cuban band leader, both in real life and in the comedy. And his wife, Lucy, Lucille Ball, would always be doing, you know, crazy things. Or at least things he thought were crazy. And he would frequently say, Lucy, you've got some splaining to do. Well, they've got some splaining to do. Now, I know the pro-Islamist forces will say, yeah, but they're not all like that. And not all Muslims. Yeah, okay, fair enough. Not all Muslims are going around shooting up Christians and so on. But I get that. But it's part of a religion that our rascally leaders, like former Liberal Prime Minister Jean Chrétien and former U.S. President George Bush, assured us was a religion of peace. George Frat Boy Bush told people that. When the blood was still wet on the streets of New York, outside the Twin Towers. Well, yeah, but Islam is a religion of peace. And yet that atrocity was done in the name of Islam. If our politicians would use car salesmen, we would laugh them out of existence. Nobody would fall for this crap. Okay, on to another topic. Canada will soon have to deal with Huawei. That's Huawei, and it's a red Chinese mega tech company. And it's competing very aggressively to provide the new generation of technology, which will be the I think they call it D5, isn't it? And that will be revolutionary technology. It will be used in cell phones and so on. Now, the United States is strongly against the Five Eyes countries using this. Now, Five Eyes are the countries whose communications spy agencies cooperate. And the Five Eyes are Australia, New Zealand, Britain, Canada, and the United States. And part of what they do is, with permission, they spy on each other. A country is not, or at least Canada and the United States are not supposed to, without a warrant, spy on their own citizens. So how did they get around that? Well, that's easy. New Zealand hypothetically spies on Canada. The United States spies on New Zealand. Australia spies on, you get the picture. And they exchange intelligence. Now, the American government and many scientists are extremely concerned about Huawei providing this 5G network equipment, because first of all, Huawei cooperates actively with the Red Chinese government and the Red Chinese intelligence. There is certainly, according to American authorities, a back door into this technology, which means they can spy on you. Canada has not made its decision. Australia, New Zealand, and the U.S. have said no to Huawei. Britain probably will say no. What will Canada do? Well, we have a China sucky government in power under Justin Trudeau. Many of the people in the China Department of Foreign Affairs are China fans. Trudeau himself is a fan. He liked the Red Chinese government, way of government, because they can make decisions fast. Well, yeah, it's a dictatorship. We've had issues with them of late, and we're at a cold snap in our relations. Anyway, a commentary by Kelly McParland in the National Post today, we read, White House Security Advisor Robert O'Brien means no words about Washington's strong-arm techniques, warning Ottawa to keep Huawei out of Canada's coming 5G network if it hopes to maintain access to intelligence gathering from the U.S. and other allies. Yes, because that they don't want to share crucial intelligence through a network that the Red Chinese may well be able to read. And this is the warning from Robert O'Brien. When they get Huawei into Canada or other Western countries, they're going to know every health record, every banking record, every social media post. They're going to know everything about every single Canadian, O'Brien said. There's no reason to suspect the U.S. of needless paranoia about Huawei and its activities. Yet another recent report, this one from the Australian Strategic Policy Institute, found that Huawei works directly with Peking's re-education operations in Xinjiang province, helping build a sophisticated digital surveillance system for the constant monitoring of inmates. excuse me again. The Trudeau government was careful to delay a decision on Huawei and 5G until safely through the recent election. Co-author of the report, Vicky Shizhong Su, charged the courtesy of Huawei everyone in Xinjiang province, from telecommunications companies to social media companies to tech companies, the make cameras, form this ecosystem that enables and allows this mass detention, these gross human rights abuses to happen on a large scale. So it will be super spy on Canadians if we allow the Red Chinese to, or their company Huawei, to build this network in Canada. Now, several of our big telecommunications companies have already committed to it, and should the government go against it, it may put them out several billions of dollars. I could even justify compensating them, because our security is worth more than a couple of billion dollars. I'm not suggesting the sum is a measly one or not to be considered, but sometimes there are things that are more important than money. Good as usual on Donald Trump. There are people, populists and white nationalists, who criticize him, and I certainly have criticized him myself on occasion. I don't have a problem with this, but he has done so much. Now, this latest thing is fairly minor, I agree, but important nonetheless. President Trump is going to repeal Obama's gender bathroom laws. And there's an old gender bathroom sign. It's got the sort of the outline drawing of a man, the outline drawing of a woman, you know, with the skirt, and then the outline drawing of a of a made up creature that's a man, but with half a skirt. And very sensibly, Donald Trump is going to repeal this, and the Trump Organization told last week told state funded school locales across the country that they never again need to enable gender understudies to utilize the washroom that matches their sex personality. The word arrived in an announcement from Education Secretary Betsy DeVos that she was pulling back an order issued under President Barack Obama that required school sites to give transgendered understudies a chance to utilize whichever washroom complied with their sex characteristics, their sex character, or hazard the loss of government funding. Yeah, so the usual big stick approach: do it our way or bad things. What could spur a visually impaired and brutal assault on youthful kids this way? Asked Chad Griffin, leader of Human Rights Campaign, which bills itself as the country's biggest social equality association for lesbian, gay, androgynous, transgender, and eccentric individuals. Yeah, in other words, the mentally messed up. These transgender understudies basically need to go to class toward the beginning of the day without dread of separation or badgering. No, you go to the bathroom that your body type requires. You know, if you're born a female, you go to the ladies' washroom. If you're born a male, you go to the male's washroom. You may feel like the opposite sex. That's that's your mental state. It shouldn't matter a whit. And you know, this is some of the basic good sense that has been lacking. Sharon Fenner from Hawaii comments. He's a cowardly monster who deserves the same fate that he dished out to helpless dogs, and I will say a special prayer that he gets it soon. What's she talking about? Well, here's a role model, so to speak. Vic, as that dog lay on the ground fighting for air, Qantas Phillips grabbed its front legs and Michael Vick grabbed its back legs. They swung the dog over their heads like a jump rope. They slammed it to the ground. The impact didn't kill it, so Phillips and Vick slammed it again. The two men kept at it, alternating back and forth, pounding the creature against the ground until at last the little dog was dead. This is from the International Society Against Vick Endorsements. And it's got a Facebook page as well. just in case you're a little hazy on who Michael Vick is, he is, of course, a Negro. And I'm going to share what Google has to say about Michael Vick. Michael Dwayne Vick is a former American football quarterback who played 13 seasons in the National Football League, primarily with the Atlanta Falcons. He played college football at Virginia Tech. He was born in 1980. So he's a controversial former football player. He's black, of course. Now, I totally agree with the idea of massively protesting what this person did, the insane cruelty to animals. Well, sad to say, the next story is I might say not unexpected. Ursula Haverbeck is a 91-year-old political prisoner in Germany. Now, what would she have done to deserve prison? She's currently serving a two-and-a-half-year prison term. Poisoned her ex-husband, former husband? No, nothing like that. Ms. Haverbeck, over a number of years, has questioned the new religion of Holocaust. And in Germany, That is a crime. That's right. No free speech in Germany. This is something that I think we have to constantly insist on. Never let them say, these countries that deny free speech and go to and put 91-year-old women and men in prison for the non-violent expression of their views. Never let them call themselves democracies. They're not. They're tyrannies. Well, here's the story. German court rejects Nazi grammar appeal as it rules Holocaust denial is not covered by free speech. Yeah, see, that's always the dodge. You've got free speech. It's just that you can't say this. Yeah, but if I can't say that, then I don't have free speech, do I? Now, when we're talking about opinions, yes, of course, there are laws of libel. I cannot say, let us say, that Joe Smith is a convicted child molester, if in fact that's not the case. But with that acknowledged exception, I should have the right to my opinion on anything. The Holocaust happened. It didn't happen. It might have happened. It partially happened. George Bush was an idiot. George Bush was a genius. Opinion. That's what freedom of speech is about. Do you have to agree with my opinion? No. My opinion may even be obviously, self-evidently nutty. But I should still have the right to that opinion and to be able to express it. That's what free speech is about. Anyway, back to Ursula Haverbeck. I met her. She's a wonderful, wonderful lady. I met her 2 years ago, so she'd be 89 at the time. I'll tell you, that lady has one big appetite for breakfast. I had breakfast with her. And, she's a healthy, beauty. She's a beautiful woman. At 91, she must have been just a drop-dead, gorgeous woman, in her youth. Anyway, German Holocaust denier. Well, she doesn't deny the Holocaust. This, of course, is a press used, a press label. Because it makes you sound like a nut. I'll tell you why. What do people understand when they hear Holocaust denier? Well, I'll tell you what they understand. They understand that you say that no Jews died in World War II, which, of course, it is absurd. I'll put it a little differently. No Jews were murdered in World War II, which is equally absurd. Yes, some Jews were murdered. Some Jews were murdered by the National Socialists. Some were executed, I would say, legitimately. Many died in the detention camps near the end of the war, not from murder, like Anne Frank, and this is widely admitted. Anne Frank was not murdered. Anne Frank died of typhus. And a lot of people in the detention camps died of typhus because in the very last days of the war, or last couple months of the war, there was very little food in Germany for anybody. Thanks to Allied bombing and so on, distribution services were completely breaking down. Yes, people died. Jews died. So unfortunately, that term Holocaust denial suggests the person so accused denies that any Jews died. Well, virtually nobody does, and certainly Ursula Haverbeck doesn't deny that either. It's incorrect to call her a Holocaust denier, but anyway, I'm digressing a little bit from the story. German Holocaust skeptic Ursula Haverbeck has been sentenced to 2.5 years in prison after the country's highest court ruled that denying the mass murder of Jews during Nazi Germany is not covered by the right to free speech and threatens public peace. Now, this is the big joke. Section 130 of the German Criminal Code, which is the anti-free speech law, actually makes it a crime, makes to racially incite the masses. Now, questioning an allegation, and that is that, you know, 6 million died, and most of them were executed by in gas chambers, many of them in Auschwitz, etc. Some of the key beliefs of the new religion of Holocaust. That is not inciting the masses to violence. It might be encouraging them to think, but it's not inciting them to violence. Incitement, a racial incitement, would be, say, to a crowd of, let's say, Muslims. A Muslim leader says, "Go and kill the infidel," which would mean white Germans who don't believe in Islam. Now, that would be racial incitement. Questioning this new religion of Holocaust is not inciting the masses, but that's what the German courts insist. Haverbeck, who is known as Nazi Grandma, was convicted last May for publishing a series of articles in which she insisted that the Holocaust and murder of Jews at Auschwitz concentration camp in Germany, in German-occupied Poland, are not historically proven. And in fact, she's dead right about that. There's a whole lot of problems with the Auschwitz story. I'll tell you, one of them, this is the most obvious, and this is actually a religion. The Holocaust is a religion imposed upon non-Jews. And it's enforced by the state in Germany. It's a state religion. Germany is every much a theocracy as Iran. In Iran, while there is limited tolerance of other religions, Iran is the Islamic Republic of Iran. It's a state religion. Well, the state religion of Germany is this Holocaust. You must believe. Well, okay, let me put it different. You may not have to believe, but it's hard to make you believe, but you must not question or express any disbelief in this. Now, any time you cannot express disbelief in something, then it's a religion. Scientific, historical assertions are always subject to disbelief and challenging. And that doesn't mean a challenge isn't necessarily right. The only thing that cannot be questioned is a religious belief in a theocracy. You must believe or keep your mouth shut. Okay. Oh, yes, about Auschwitz. Okay. Now, the traditional account in the new religion of Holocaust was that approximately 4 million people died at Auschwitz, a labor camp in Poland. Well, when the wall fell 30 years ago, and Soviet and Polish records became available, it turned out that the number of deaths in Auschwitz were not 4 million, but 1.1 million. And in fact, I believe that figure has come down since. Deaths from all causes. Now, the traditional assertion was that 70% of the people who died in Auschwitz were Jews. So that 70% of 4 million would be roughly 2.8 million. Now, when the overall death toll came down, from 4 to 1, actually it's probably considerably less, but let's just take 1. Well, on the same ratio, that would mean about 700,000 Jews, give or take, died there. Now, wouldn't the difference between 2.8 million and 700,000 would be 2.1 million? Wouldn't the 2.1 million come off the 6 million and leave us with an overall figure of 3.9? Well, it would. But it never has. And this is simple
basic math.
They changed their overall story, and the math never changes. To maintain the 6 million figure would be the equivalent of the Lord changing 5 loaves of bread and 2 fishes into enough food to fill to feed a crowd of what was, I believe, estimated about 5,000 people. Now that's a miracle. I don't think a similar miracle, a mathematical miracle, happened in Germany. And now that's, this is just one tiny point. So when Ursula Haverbeck says that is not, it was not historically proven that millions of Jews died in Auschwitz, she's right. By their own account, by the account of the proponents of this state religion, it makes no sense. That's the bottom line. It doesn't add up. But you can't say that in Germany. In Germany, denying the Holocaust constitutes a crime of incitement to hatred and carries a prison sentence of up to 5 years. You're 5 years in jail for having an opinion. It's a free country. You know, my parents, well, they're dead, but the people of my parents' generation, many of whom fought in the Second World War, as did my parents, in the belief that they were helping to free Europe. Now, their belief was wrong, but I don't fault them for it. Historically, that was not what World War II was all about. It was for other things. But that doesn't matter. That's what my parents' generation believed. And to see what has happened to Germany, it's not a free country. What did you and your pals die for? What did you think you were doing? What did you die for? What a betrayal. Germany is not a free country. And it's not a free country because essentially it's under foreign control. But to continue here. The 89-year-old went to Germany's constitutional court to appeal her sentence, claiming that her statements fall under the country's right to free speech, which is protected by law. But in their ruling, the High Court judges found that the right to free speech does not protect denial of the Holocaust. The dissemination of the untrue and deliberately false statements of fact cannot contribute to the development of public opinion and thus do not fall in the remits of protection for free speech, the court, the judges wrote in a statement. The denial of Nazi genocide goes beyond the limits of the peaceful public debate and threatens public peace. How does it threaten public peace? I mean, hey, if those opinions are obviously wrong, call them out. Hey, you're on. Now that doesn't threaten public peace. You know, if somebody says to me, Donald Trump is not the president of the United States. Well, that's his opinion. And he's perfectly entitled to that opinion. And you say, well, in your account, who's the president of the United States? And the person might say, well, it's a secret. Okay, that's your opinion. I think it's obviously nutty. But you should have the right to opinion. You should have the right to be wrong, if that's indeed wrong. Ursula Haverbeck, her articles denying the so-called Holocaust were published in a right-wing magazine, Stimme des Reich, that's Voice of the Empire. Haverbeck has received several convictions from a range of German courts for her claims that the systematic mass murder of millions of Jews and other groups during Germany's National Socialist regime did not take place. On one occasion, she was convicted for calling the Holocaust the biggest and longest-lasting lie in history. And what sort of state puts you in jail for an opinion? Well, I'll tell you, the sort of state that knows that that opinion is correct. When you cannot challenge an alleged historical account, I say historical account, then that isn't a religion. It's an imposed religion. Here's a very interesting thought piece about the October 21st election in Canada and the results. And we were not, many of us were not particularly happy with these results. but I've mentioned to people that it takes a while. A new party is not always going to be accepted the first time around. We have to be patient and keep at it, and we will. Anyway, this is written by Salim Mansour, who is a very interesting guy. He's a Muslim. He is was a strong member and candidate for Maxime Bernier's Populist Party, the People's Party of Canada, and he's been an outspoken opponent of globalism, and he's called out Islamism. For just those reasons. And this is his post-election analysis. In this post-election analysis, Salim Mansour, People's Party of Canada, candidate for London North Centre, begins by regretting his party's loss, but follows quickly by noting that the election 2019 firmly planted the seeds of hope for Canada's political future. The 300,000 Canadians who voted for the PPC represent a truly national constituency, in sharp contrast to the Reform Party of 1988, which was very much a regional or Western phenomenon. Mr. Mansour notes that the beachhead established by the PPC in election 2019 came in spite of a media corrupted by a $600 million buyout package, which the government gave to media shortly before the election. And it's a way of, not very subtle control, that if you go too far against, the globalist mainstream, you might not get the money. The media was hell-bent on insulating the ruling liberals from scrutiny, even as it bludgeons its opposition with innuendo, fake news, and hearsay. The media was not alone in slagging the PPC. The Conservative Party descended into the muck by engaging the services of Warren Kinsella. As a former Liberal Party hitman, to accuse the PPC and its leader of racism, bigotry, and being alt-right, whatever that might mean. Just a grab bag of Kinsella slurs. The malicious distraction strategies employed by the establishment parties worked as the thorny issues raised by the PPC, like the need to repeal the Multiculturalism Act, do away with the duplicitous motion M103, which is denounces Islamophobia, and walking away from the divisive Paris, that's the carbon tax agreement, were never allowed to come to the fore. Accordingly, the elephants in the room, nation-busting globalism and Islamism, remained out of reach for the debate and put an input by rank-and-file Canadians. Mansour believes Canadians will become increasingly seized with these issues, and the elephants will tire of government that continues to ignore them. When they do, he notes, there will be one party to listen. And here's his analysis. A month ago, after the vote, I wish to share with you some reflections on the state of Canadian politics following the October election. But first, I want to express my heartfelt thanks for your generous contributions to our campaign and for the friendship extended to me in person. I will remain forever grateful. This is Salim Mansour. As a candidate for the PPC in London North Centre, I was disappointed with the final results, as were members of the People's Party across the country and those who voted for the party. We expected receiving more than the final count of somewhere close to 2% of the total votes cast in the election, and we did not expect to see our leader, Maxime Bernier, lose his seat in the most Quebec, which he had held for more than a decade. but the circumstances and the context in which the PPC contested the 2019 election were heavily weighted against it. The PPC was barely a year in the making, and the 5 weeks campaign offered a very small window within which to deliver widely its message and platform to the electorate. Moreover, the mainstream media, corrupted by the liberal orchestrated handout of some $600 million of taxpayers' money, meant, as it turned out to be, that the intent to insulate the Prime Minister and the Liberal Party in power from media-led public scrutiny while bludgeoning the opposition with hearsay and fake news worked in the months leading up to the election and during the election campaign. The mainstream pro-liberal and pro-left media was stacked against the PPC. The media made no effort to mask their smear campaign. They fabricated branding Maxime Bernier as a leader of a party consisting of alt-right, white bigots, hostile to immigrants, to Muslims and Jews, to multiculturalism, and the progressive consensus of the establishment elite in politics, business, academia, and the media. We now know that Andrew Scheer's Conservative Party hired Laura Kinsella, the notorious Liberal Party fixer, to malign the PPC and the leader by planting fake news in the media. And they succeeded in spreading the falsehood which hurt us in the polls. Yet, if we put in perspective the effort behind the 2019 campaign and the 300,000 Canadians who voted for the party, it can be said that Maxime Bernier and the activists he brought together have planted the seeds for PPC's growth right across the country. It's the only party that places Canadian national interests and the well-being of Canadians as key tests to assess the merits of any policy initiative, domestic and foreign, by Ottawa. The PPC is, unlike the origin of the regional-based Reform Party in 1988, a pan-Canadian party with a pan-Canadian nationalist populist vision to help Canadians from coast to coast take back their country from the establishment elite-driven drift toward globalism. Indeed, during the election campaign, the PPC platform listed the most pertinent issues that Canadians need to seriously and urgently think about if the problems confronting Canada are to be effectively addressed. We talked about the economy and jobs, the urgency to balance the budget and eliminate the spiral of deficit spending, fairness and equity on the subject of equalization payments, federal-provincial relations, the perils of growing Western alienation, building the pipeline necessary to move Alberta tar sands oil to international markets, removing barriers on interprovincial trade, protecting our national sovereignty, rejecting the Paris Accord while the provinces decide on carbon tax, restoring and respecting the rights of Indians within our constitution, repealing multiculturalism and Motion 103 on Islamophobia that restricts our freedom of speech, withdrawing from the UN Global Compact on Migration, and sustainable immigration policy with numbers provide to begin a meaningful national conversation, in other words, realistic immigration reform. Immigration and migration from the global south to the global north have become, over the past decade, the most compelling issues in Western democracies. A growing majority of voters in the West want less immigration. In a recent YouGov Sunday Times opinion poll in the UK, for instance, done ahead of their December 12th election, 54% of the voters indicated the existing level of immigration was too high, while 7% indicated that the level was too low. In Canada, a poll done by Leger in June 2019 indicated that 63% of respondents held the opinion that government should be placing a limit on immigration as the numbers were too high and unsustainable, while 37% of respondents wanted the government to raise the numbers. As the numbers show, Canada is not an exception among Western democracies when it comes to the general electorate's apprehension on matters of immigration and migration. But the establishment elites and their four parties in Parliament, the Liberals, Conservatives, New Democrats, and Green, refuse to publicly engage in any discussion on immigration, given the potential to unravel the elite consensus, which is a consensus, really, of just a minority, that Canada was built by immigrants and existing immigration levels approaching annually 1% of the population is an asset. It was simpler and more effective for the establishment elite to smear the PPC as racist and anti-immigrant than in respecting the public to engage in civil discussion on the subject that will not go away. Since Prime Minister Justin Trudeau signed the UN Global Compact on Migration and Canada is one of the choice destinations of the movement of population from the global south to the global north, immigration and migration, as numbers increase, will become increasingly a disruptive factor in Canadian politics, not unlike the situation in Europe and the United States. Consequently, the PPC will not be deterred from addressing the subject at the present and in the future. The subject of immigration and migration is intimately bound with the question of what sort of Canada is in the making. This is the question that the establishment elites seek to avoid. Multiculturalism is based on the specious premise that all cultures are equal, which in effect has hollowed out the culture of old Canada, based on Christian traditions and classical liberal values of individual rights and freedoms, while immigration and migration from the global south is rapidly altering the demographic profile of the country. Douglas Murray, in his best-selling book, The Strange Death of Europe, Immigration, Identity, and Islam, published in 2017, discussed at length how multiculturalism and increasing levels of immigration have, quote, contributed to a continent in the grips of its own demise. In my book, The Delectable Lie, A Liberal Repudiation of Multiculturalism, also published in 2011, I discussed, and this is Salim Mansur, how multiculturalism and immigration joined together paradoxically work to dilute the foundation principles of a liberal democracy such as ours. And I'm going to continue this analysis tomorrow. It's extremely well written. I'm going to take my my musical break right now, and this is a song. I love this guy. Ray Stevens is a great satirist, singer, a wicked sense of humor, and this is the global warming song. Ray Stevens, and this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me. Here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. This is Ray Stevens, and he calls it the Global Warming Song. And the Global Warming Song from the CD We the People.
Now here we have two real pioneers embarking upon a new career, capitalizing on this global warming hype. Yeah, they're the ones that brought you the left-handed hammer and tried to market a recycled pamper. You could say the Golden Brothers have always been the entrepreneurial type. But this next harebrained gullible venture could be earmarked as the major clincher as to whether or not they'll be living it up in their retirement age. They put all they had into one bankroll, bought a bunch of land down at the South Pole, eagerly awaiting the impending doom of climate change, thereby being in the catbird seat in the new Florida. And I'm all for working hard. Keep this planet clean, but man-made global warming just don't make no sense to me. But if you insist on buying into this media false alarm, I know a couple of guys who wheel and deal in frozen farms. Next up on the real estate show, we have the Gullible Brothers, live via satellite from the east coast of Antarctica. Hello, boys, are you on the line?
I'm Gary, Barry Gullible. This is my younger brother, Justice Gullible. Thanks for having us on the show.
You bet. What actually do you have available in the way of land?
We got beautiful home sites available, which ocean front once the ice melts a little bit. And God, it's cold. And now we've got some beautiful farms and more inland. As soon as we lose about 40 feet of this snow. Oh, Lord.
I'm all for working hard to keep this planet clean. But man-made global warming just don't make no sense to me. But if you insist on buying into this media false alarm, I know a couple of guys who wheel and deal in frozen farms. Well, boys, what's the weather like down there? Sounds cold.
Well, it's not too bad. Say 62 below, but at the moment wind chills is 100 below. But spirits are high. We've been told it's definitely going to rise in a few wildest records and 7 feet of snow and all. But Al Gore said it's going to be okay. Oh, Lord. Well, Justice Rod, here comes a polar bear.
I'm all for working hard just to keep this planet clean. But man-made global warming just don't make no sense to me. But if you insist on buying into this media false alarm, I know a couple of guys who wheel and deal in frozen farms. Well, we'd just like to thank the Gullibles for joining us today. Barry Gullible, any last words for those who may be looking to relocate once the rest of the world floods? Oh, my goodness. Okay, Justice, how about you?
I can't feel my feet.
Now here's another one by Ray Stevens. I hope you like it. This is his.
If you write anything on your computer, you need to get grounded.
This is his song, A Hot Chili Cookout.
So I said to myself, hey, listen, Sylvia, yeah, ought to get on an airplane, go first class. Now, we hadn't been on a plane in years, not because of any flying fears. We just hadn't wanted to get any place further than a tank of gas. So I made reservations, packed one bag, and Charlene packed everything she could drag, and we took a cab to the passenger drop-off zone. Yeah, I gave them our tickets and showed them ID so that they could be sure it was her and me. But then at security, you won't believe what all that went on. Well, the skies ain't friendly anymore since flying became a contact sport. You take off your coat and belt and shoes, but that's not all that make you lose. No, the skies just ain't friendly anymore. Took off your shoes and rings and watch, and the guy said, I need to check your crotch, and I need to see those liquid toiletries. And he gave me a grope and a squeeze and a pat, and I tell you, friends, when I go to the vet, they treat my old bird dog with more dignity. Yeah, and there's a woman in line in front of my wife, and I've never seen nothing like it in my life. A guy grabbed hold of her like it was her honeymoon.
If he touches me like he touched her,
Charlene said,
he'll buy me dinner first, and then we'll have to get us a motel room.
Oh, the skies just ain't friendly anymore since flying became a contact sport. Well, I retrieved her luggage and rented the car and said, self, Philadelphia ain't that far, and I have to be subjected to all this mess. Yeah, but as I was leaving, I saw Charlene on her third trip through the body street. Takes all kinds of make up this world, I guess. Now I'm only praying that some son of depravity don't hide TNT in a body cavity, cause imagine then what they'll put us through. Yeah, Obama, Nancy, Harry, and Hillary would probably say, well, what's the big mystery? Just let them eat cake and fly private jets like we do. Well, the skies just ain't friendly anymore since flying became a contact sport. just ain't friendly anymore. You know, when you think about it, those TSA folks probably don't like it any more than we do. Well, some of them might like it a whole lot. Well, I guess it's don't ask, don't tell. I was just thinking about opting for a full body x-ray scan, but to tell you the truth, I just don't look good naked anymore. Yeah, but Charlene, she got extra copies of hers. Says she's gonna use them on next year's Christmas cards. Yeah, she's been through so many times, we don't need a nightlight anymore. She got her part-time job down there at the lighthouse. I know what I'm gonna get her for her birthday. A shade. A big shade.
He's a great talent. Ray Stevens, this is Paul Fromm. You're on the Fighting Side of Me. Back with you again tomorrow, same time, midnight Eastern time. The show is repeated at 8 in the morning and 4 in the afternoon. All those are Eastern Standard Time. And I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf Forever. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the Fighting Side of Me.
In days of yore, from Britain's shore, Wolfe the dauntless hero came and planted firm Britannia's flag on Canada's fair domain. Here may it wave our boast, our pride, and joined in love together, the thistle, shamrock, rose, and twine, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. At Queenston Heights and Lundy's Lane, our brave fathers side by side for freedom, homes, and loved ones dear, firmly stood and nobly died. And those dear rights which they maintained, we swear to yield them never. Our watchword evermore shall be the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. Our fair dominion now extends from Cape Race to Nootka Sound. May peace forever be our lot and plenteous store abound. And may those ties of love be ours, which discord cannot sever, and flourish green o'er freedom's home, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever.